Hey everyone, I'm Francesco Akira, the Nova Fireball, the new member of the United Empire. And please enjoy listening Wrestle In.
Hi, hello, and welcome everyone to this special episode of On the Indies. My name is Adam Ryan, and I'm joined today by someone who has worked both on camera and behind the scenes with some of the most recognizable names in wrestling. From LA Knight and Jon Moxley to Jake Crist and Sami Callihan, even Cody Hawk, King Vu, and everyone in between. He's the former voice of HWA, the co-host of the Bulletproof podcast, and currently a commentator for Spot Monkey Promotions, the former jack of all trades for the Heartland Wrestling Association, your good friend and mine, Chris the Brain. Chris, well, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and what an introduction. You made me seem much more important than I probably am, but, you know, that's the role of the host.
I know.
No. Build up the guests, make them hype it.
Exactly. You know, I remember hearing you on TV, you know, on HWA Adrenaline in like 2006, 2007.
Right.
Also on the HWA DVD releases from that time period. But just to sort of lay the foundation before we get into anything else, tell me a little bit about how you first got into doing commentary for wrestling.
So up here in the Cleveland area, where I'm back to living again, there was a show, and this was in the height. This was like 99, like height of the Attitude Era. There was a show on a low power station here called Pro Wrestling Weekly. And they would basically just give, they'd basically read the newsletters on TV. They'd, you know, give all the dirt and everything. People would call in and interact, and or you could email and all that. So, you know, I got in touch with some of them and would talk back and forth. And eventually they shifted from just doing a show about wrestling to putting on actual shows.
Okay.
And that's how I kind of, they gave me a little tryout for one show. And, you know, when they then, instead of that being a new show, it became a wrestling show on this low-powered station. UWC, it was the United Wrestling Council. And every week, yeah, I was there as one of the commentators on Ripped, was their show, and was done at a bar that has been torn down since. But yeah, it was humble beginnings, but it was there that I got my start and met the Daredevil of Extreme himself, Tack, who you may remember.
Oh, Tack. Yes, I remember Tack.
So he was there, and then when he graduated college, went down to train with the HWA, and then I lost my job up here, and I had 6 months of severance, and I was like, you know what? Let's roll the dice, take the gamble, make the move, and yeah, I found myself at the Heartland Wrestling Association, and after a few months of, yeah, just kind of doing little things here and there, interviews, they put me on the show, and I never left.
The rest is history.
Yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned Tack. So this wasn't on my notes, but that kind of sprung something to mind. One of my favorite matches from HWA is the Tack versus Dr. Bones match, where they fight in the car wash. So I just actually watched that recently. Tell me about that match for those who may not, you know about it.
Yeah. The building in Evendale had a car wash right next to it, which was nice and convenient. My car was always nice and clean because I could always just stop on the way there or on the way home to do. But yeah, you know, I believe it was just a false count anywhere type thing. They went outside and they just that was not planned as far as I know. We certainly didn't plan to have to pay for one of the spray nozzle things got
done. Yeah.
Got damaged, so yeah, we had to pay for that. Yeah, it was, that's, you know, indie wrestling at its finest. It just happens. Just go with it. Better to ask for forgiveness than permission type thing, I think.
Exactly. I think it was a parking lot match, wasn't it?
It may have been.
Yeah.
My memory might be fuzzy on some things, but yeah.
Yeah, because I think it was a parking lot match or something like that. Because didn't they have like a best of seven series or something going on?
They definitely had a feud going there for a bit. But yeah,
that's one of the most memorable things from the Evendale era. I do think.
Right, and I think it made one of the DVDs. We had some sort of wildest matches or some sort of compilation.
It was, It was like the gimmick best of the gimmick matches or attack of the gimmick matches or something like that.
There you go.
So, kind of around that same time, there was a guy coming up in HWA named John Moxley.
Yes.
So what were your first impressions of Moxley?
Moxley, he definitely had something about him. Like, he radiated some sort of different energy than everybody else in the group. And he obviously was in great shape, a young raw boned hoss, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, and it kept going from there. And, you know, he had when I started, it was still part of Necessary Roughness, which, you know, was kind of the Varsity Blues themed tag team. Once he got out of that, then he just started going, and it's like, he did not stop. He did not stop. And he just kept progressing quicker than I think anyone would have imagined. And it's not a surprise that he was one of the guys who made it big.
Yeah. I remember him as part of the Necessary Roughness team. That's what was like the very first time I saw him. I think it was at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
For one of those World War III shows where they had like the giant three rings set up everywhere. I think I went to pretty much every one of those shows. But yeah, that was the first time I saw Moxley, was when he was Necessary Roughness, and he had the eye black and the half jersey on. And it's like, who is this guy? But he was from like day one, first, you know, he was amazing.
Yeah.
So, and you know, speaking of Moxley, you and I kind of talked previously about Cyber Clash.
Yeah.
You know, the first internet pay-per-view HWA did, and that was back in 2006. And it may seem kind of crazy that HWA did a pay-per-view on the internet in 2006. You know, how did that whole thing, doing a pay-per-view on the internet, come about?
That, I think, was set up by Chad Delafield, who was half the owner with Cody Hawk. I think he knew somebody that could do that. And it all kind of, it was like news to us. I was like, what, we're going to be, you know, and that was like a completely new concept.
Yeah.
Now you take three phones and you could be on worldwide right now if you're throwing the show. But yeah, at that point it was like, all right, yeah, let's, you know, that everybody, I just remember just the excitement was building. And I think I've talked about this with you before.
Yeah.
It was like that night before, it did feel like this is the biggest thing that, and for most of us it was, because we weren't there during the contract years. We weren't there for the Pillman shows and all the other big things they had done. This was kind of the generation after all of that. So it was huge for us. And yeah, it a different world back then. So odd how the technology jumped. Like, I feel like I was in just a few years too early, and everything would have been easier to get out there to the masses. But my recollection is, it was a Chad thing. He set it up. He knew somebody. We had the building fortunately was able to manage it as far as the technology needed.
Yeah.
And, because I think we needed like a T1 line, and it was,
That wasn't if memory serves me correctly, that building wasn't big at all either, was it?
No,
it was kind of like a warehouse.
It was. And you had kind of the little gym area right up in the front as you walked in. There was the office next to that. And you had, we got maybe 100, 125 people could get in there.
Yeah.
Which, made for a very intimate setting. It would have been nice if we had a bigger place, but it served its purpose.
It did. Yeah, and I remember going to several shows there. I thought it was a pretty neat place. The ring was like backed up against that one wall.
Right.
And then you could get all the fans kind of like on the three sides. And Ewan Hooks was there right there ringside for everything.
Right, with the old Thunder table. Old WCW.
That was a table from Thunder?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't even know that.
And I remember when they got out of that building, I was like, oh, I had an apartment. Like, I had no room for the Thunder table at my apartment. But I was like, oh, that would have been so cool to take that. And then Moxley pulled me aside and told me about some of the things that happened on that table after hours. And I said, I'm glad I don't have that table in my home. And I'm also glad I would always like Clorox wipe that thing down before every show.
Yeah, it's smart decision there.
I was like, it all. I'm like, thank good, because
I don't want to think about the stuff that may have happened there. So speaking of Moxley, this kind of goes back, everything seems to go back to Moxley, but he squared off against Cody Hawk.
Yeah.
In the main event of that show. In a cage, yes. It was an epic cage match, honestly. It's probably one of the best matches I think HWA did during that time period. For those who aren't familiar with Cody Hawk, can maybe talk a little bit about him?
Well, like I mentioned, he was half owner, and he ran the school. And he kind of got it from Les Thatcher. He was kind of the descendant there. Like, he was one of Les's guys, and then he started doing his thing. He was basically the heart and soul of HWA in that era. You know, he was the boss. Obviously had a hand in the booking, especially his own booking.
I mean,
he kind of was his thing. And, Mox was basically the prize pupil. So it was really the student versus the teacher, the classic storyline. And Mox, who was, was off the rails, and he wasn't even as off the rails as he was going to be as time went on, but it was, you could definitely see the glimmers of the madman inside John Moxley even then.
And if I remember correctly, I think they took a turnbuckle off or tore the ring apart or something during that.
That thing had all the gaga type. It was, very WWE type, where it was all kinds of things happening. Joe Copas, I believe, scaled the side of the cage. Yep. They pulled out all the bells and whistles for that one.
And think LA Knight was out there ringside for something interfering. Yeah,
if that was during the Moxley crew era,
I
think it was, yeah. Because it was Mox. And that's the thing, too. You think about it. It was Moxley, Dick Rick, now LA Knight, Pepper Parks, now Blade.
Mm-hmm.
And Sammy Callahan.
Those are four, like, some of the four top names of wrestling right there right now.
Right, yeah. They're in somewhere on TV every week. Yeah.
Exactly. And then Sammy still has a school in Dayton. School in Dayton. And Cody's still got a school in Hamilton.
Right. So,
And
I think Cody's with that. There's the midget wrestling. I think he's with them now. Like, he might drive the ring around and kind of help run that.
Yeah.
Last I heard.
He was with Future Great Wrestling, I think, for a time as well.
Yeah.
But I'm
not sure. That's where they had the school. I don't know if they lost that building or not, or I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either what's going on with that. Because last I heard, I think they did lose the building.
Yeah, I think it was like last summer.
And I think they recently, over the summer, ran a show in Westchester. But beyond that, I haven't heard much from them.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I think Cody's on the road when the midget guys wrestle. And, because I think Aaron Williams actually took over as basically the head trainer towards the end there.
Okay. So kind of going back to Cyber Clash, is there anything you remember in particular about the show or maybe the cage match itself?
Well, again, like I said, the cage match was crazy. Like you said, they tore up the ring. We had Copas flying in. I just remembered video packages. Like, we had video packages before matches, and I was like, whoa. And like, it was like everybody did some. Like, there was all kinds of people who were pitching in, like, okay, we need to make this huge. Again, I remember being there the night before, cleaning everything up and just getting ready for this thing. Because you had the big cage match, you had the big ladder match. You had Nigel and Chad Collins. So you had a little bit of something for everybody on the show, which I think helped make it what it was, too. It was like you had the classic wrestling, you had the crazy ladder match where they were going to kill each other, and then you had the feud of feuds between teacher and student.
I think you had Pepper Parks and Jimmy Yang on the show as well.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, there was... And there was a four-way tag, and there was some other stuff. I think Aaron Williams might even have been on the show.
He was, yeah, I believe he was.
Yeah. So, would you say that match maybe established Moxley as one of the top guys in HWA?
Yeah, that definitely was like the passing of the torch. Was like, okay, Mox is a main event guy. I mean, he was on that rise, but now it's like, okay, He had his own group. I mean, he definitely had all the machine. Even though it's not as a big machine as other machines, it was still behind him. The company was behind him, and for good reason. I mean, Mox lived in that building. He was training all the time. Obviously, he was there after hours based on my story that I told you before. But yeah, Moxley was in that building. Like, Moxley ate, drank, and slept professional wrestling at that point.
So let's kind of skip ahead a little bit to 2008. Again, something you and I talked about previously when I messaged you about, you know, John Moxley and Jay Crisp. But, you know, how do you think the John Moxley Jay Crisp feud in 2008, you know, fits the legacy of both men's careers? In particular, maybe that cage match they had at the Sorg.
Yeah, that was the match, like, when Cody decided he didn't want to do HWA anymore. He stepped away. He started his own thing. And I found myself in more of a creative spot. And the match that the feud and everything I thought of at that moment was, obviously we got Mox. And I was glad. I mean, that, I don't know that I would have gone on with it. It was like, okay, we got Mox. I got my dog barking. We got Mox. And Jake, at that point, Dave was injured. So this was a unique opportunity. Like, I think we can make Jake a singles guy. I think he could be like Bret Hart for us.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they probably battled it out here and there throughout, you know, the Evendale years.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were across the ring from each other, but never in that setting where it was like, Jake's the guy, Mox is the threat. You know, Mox is already established. Feuding with Jake is only going to help make him more of a legit singles guy. So, you know, I definitely think it helped continue Mox's ascent, and I think it brought Jake Crist up. I think that was the first time he really got to be a singles guy for a long-term type program.
And if memory serves me correctly, I think that was when he won the title and he held it. It was like 400. Yeah, it was like 400 some days.
He broke the record. Yep, he sure did. Yep. And I believe he lost to Vu.
He did.
King Vu. And by the time he lost it, it really meant something. And Vu was like an instantly made man because he ended Jake's record long title. So,
and that's, you know, that's kind of someone I wanted to also ask about was King Vu. He's someone that really does, I hate to say he got forgotten about, but he never really kind of got that big break. He never really kind of came out of HWA.
Right. And I think it was just him, I don't know that he wanted to do more. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was comfortable being the big fish in the small pond. It's odd that, he like just didn't get a look by somebody or somebody put the word in for him. He definitely could have made an impact somewhere.
Yeah. He was very agile and just a great wrestler for a guy his size.
I mean, yeah, and he was big and he lost a lot of weight, but still was big enough that he was the big man, but it just ended up helping what he could do in the ring.
Right, and he had some crazy matches with Mox, too. I think there was a TV pilot HWA did where he did a dog collar match with Mox.
Yeah, we did that in Illinois, and he was also really great at, like, he could be the lovable character and then shift it to being this maniacal King Vu. It was wonderful. Loved working with Vu.
Whose idea was King Vu?
You know what? I don't want to say like it was everything was me, like most of things. I definitely was a part of it. I don't really know who came up with it. I know we had Andre had his love connection with Chad Cruz and Matt Taylor. And then Andre got the chance to be a ref. So he was gone for WWE. That obviously did not last. But then Vu, I don't know why we turned him into King. I don't know. But it worked. And he bought into it and he played it up. I remember when we did the another TV pilot taping at Whiskey Dick's in downtown Cincinnati. And I really, really want, and I knew we couldn't with the copyright anyway, but really had the the vision of him coming out to the Coming to America King Joffy Joffer song. We did have the Rose Petal Girls leading him out, but even in Norwood too, I'm like, do we know like the Norwood High School band? Could they play the Coming to America song to bring him out? Just hearing those drums reverberating off, it would have been so awesome.
Oh yeah, that would have been super cool. And that, and in that venue in Norwood,
yeah,
that gym, that would have been amazing.
It would have been deafening in there, and it would have just that was my. But yeah, it's like no, we don't. Or if they knew, or they'd be like, yeah, they're not going to cooperate with a wrestling show. So I was like,
One of the other top stars on TV right now that we talked about earlier is LA Knight, who was known as amazing. Dick Rick. Let's talk a bit about him. How did he get started in HWA?
He was already there when I arrived. Yeah. And I think he was part of the Black Militia. He was militia man number two.
Yeah, that's right.
Then he transferred to Deuce.
Yeah.
And then he became Dick Rick. You know, I was at SummerSlam last month, and him coming out and that reaction, and I just was like, oh, if he was like 5% this popular, we would have sold so many more tickets to HWA. It would have still been going, probably. I'm like, oh, but it's amazing. I mean, the guy's always been in fantastic shape. I mean, he looks just as good now as he did when I first saw him. Would that have been 04? Probably, 2004 is when I got down there. And yeah, it was like, you know, he always had something. He always had ideas. He was always thinking of things. And it was almost like, you don't belong here, though. Like, you're not an indie wrestler. You are like a WWE wrestler right now. But you're here in this indie world where guys are flipping and doing crazy death matches and ladder matches. And you're like, you should be TV guy. And I'm glad he finally got there. And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he did not give up. Like, he said in things, I don't know how to quit. And that's quite obvious because he had a lot of ups and downs. A lot of it, you know, again, was him. A lot of it was maturity things. Like, I heard some stories when he went to these tryouts. And it's like, oh. Like, I remember one week he was like, I won't be here next Wednesday. I'm going to be at Raw and SmackDown next week. And I'll be probably coming home. Mm-hmm. That Wednesday, so don't put me on the show. And I'm driving home from work on Tuesday, and it's him, and he's like, yeah, I'll be at the show tomorrow, so if you could work me in, because I'm like, I don't know what you did, and I just felt bad. I'm like, oh good, because this again,
yeah,
no doubt he should at least have a developmental deal. I mean, come on, the guy's in tremendous shape. He looks like a TV star. He looks like a WWE superstar.
And he can talk.
And he could, right. He could talk with the best of them. And we're seeing all of that now. So I'm so happy for him. So glad he did not give up. You know, I know he moved to California, I think twice. And, you know, was doing like commercial stuff. He did some, I'm like, oh, is he just going to end up in acting? Which, again, is fine. But I'm glad he kept going.
Yeah, because he went to Impact for a while.
He was an Impact.
Yeah, and then NWA. He went to NWA, and then he finally showed up on NXT a few years ago. And I was shocked when he showed up on NXT. I wasn't expecting it.
Right.
I was like, wait, I know this guy. Yeah. So what did you think when you saw him on NXT?
Again, I was like, finally. I'd like, this should have happened probably 5-10 years ago. But yeah, it was good to see him there. And I think he actually had two stints in NXT. He was there. Because he was part of that when Triple H did like that fitness video.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys. So I don't know if, but of course back then NXT was different. It wasn't, you know, when it was just on the network. I don't know if he ever even made TV at that point.
I don't remember either.
I was watching the takeovers. I was not like a weekly NXT guy.
Same. I think, wasn't Sammy down there too at the same time?
Yeah, Sammy Callahan was down there for a bit. Yeah. So, then, yeah, that's when he got out of there for whatever reason. That's when I think he popped up in Impact and then NWA. And made his way back. Moved to Florida, and next thing you know, he popped up there. And that's always the thing with NXT. You always got to worry because you get the NXT over guys. Mm-hmm. you know, and because again, that's very much kind of like the HWA crowd. You have the same basic people showing up, and right. they get familiar with you and they get behind you. But then you go up to the main roster, and it's like, but it just went higher. It just went bigger. Like, he's just caught fire, and it's fantastic. Happy for him.
It's same here, and he just beat The Miz on pay per view or premium live event or whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
So, and he got that in that John Cena endorsement looked like too.
And he's doing the Slim Jim commercial like the Macho Man.
Exactly. I mean,
like that's huge. It's like him and Bianca. So amazing. I mean, huge.
It's so amazing to see where he was. You know, I remember seeing him at the Sorg in front of like 50 people.
Right.
And then.
And that was a good week.
I think, those Sorg shows, those were something else. I think first time I went to the Sorg to see HWA, it was in the ballroom there on the first floor. And then I went back, you know, maybe like later that year.
And we were all the way upstairs.
All the way upstairs. I'm curious, just out of my own curiosity, how did you get the ring up those stairs? Because those stairs were so narrow.
I did not do it. It was there because that was the problem with the Sorg was there was like 19 promotions running out of that building at any given time. And like they had gotten, so it was like, I wish in my era we had the Hamilton building where it was just ours.
Right.
Because our roster was pretty darn good, I would say. I'm biased, but I thought we had a damn good roster. But we're in a building and like, there'd be people like, oh, we ran a free show on, we ran a show on Tuesday. This place had we had people packed in here and we'd have like 20 the next night. It's like, wasn't that a free show? Well, yeah. I'm like, let us run a free show and let's see what happens.
And I'm surprised like more people didn't come to the HWA shows mainly because of that name, HWA.
Right. Which is why, that was a bone of contention. When Cody decided he didn't want to be a part of it anymore, Chad was still there, but he was living in Illinois, so it was me and Tim Tatum who were basically kind of keeping things going local in Ohio. And people were like, oh, you shouldn't call yourselves HWA. It's not the HWA anymore. It's like, why would you give up that name, though? It had name recognition.
Exactly.
It's like if you inherited Pepsi and decided, you know what? We're going to we're not calling our thing Pepsi anymore. We're going to call it whatever. Why would you do that? Yeah, I get it. But yeah, it was one of those like just petty indie drama things where it's like, oh, you're not the real HWA. It's like, okay, fine, we're not. But it's probably when Cody and Chad took it over and it wasn't Les's anymore, people were probably like, you're not the real HWA anymore. So.
But one show you guys did during that time was in Norwood, and it's Moxley versus Danielson.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite shows I ever went to, HWA wise. How did the thing with Danielson come about?
Well, obviously he choked out Justin Roberts,
right,
with his tie for the Nexus thing. So he became available, and we had kind of a loose working relationship with IWP out of Indianapolis, I believe.
Insanity Pro, I think.
Insanity.
Or something like that, IPW.
IPW, that's it. Thank you, IPW. So we're like, hey, you guys are running. When are you? So it was just basically that. I dealt with Mike at IPW. And like, hey, what if we teamed up here and split the cost of bringing in Danielson? We'll run Friday night, you run Saturday. Saturday in the day, we'll do a seminar. So that's how, he was available. And it was like, all right, let's do this. Because I think that's one of the things that HWA missed out on in the Evendale years. Like, I think we could have kept Ring of Honor out of Ohio almost if we were using more of those guys when we could. As opposed to then they came in and like basically took the Montgomery County Fairgrounds from us because they had all these. It's like we could have been like where it's like, oh, that's no big deal. They're here every other month anyway. So I don't know. But I definitely think we didn't tap in to every once in a while bringing in that special guest to pop the ground. Now, I get it. Evendale had to, you didn't have as much, you know, it wouldn't have made sense there necessarily because there's only so many seats. But yeah, if you had a little bit bigger of a place where you could have brought in a star.
Yeah, well, because you guys also ran the Dayton Gym Club. And
yeah, that became kind of the backup after the Montgomery County thing fell apart.
Yeah, because I think, and there were some World War III shows there too. I think there's at least one I remember. I think there was a pay-per-view there too you guys did.
Yeah, the second one we did, Road to Destiny. I think that was with Mox and Rosie on top.
Yeah. And then I think Jimmy Yang and Bruce Leroy was...
Yeah, Timac was there, yeah. Oh, against the Airborne. I think it was the Airborne.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I could say I called a Timac match.
That's something you can say every day.
Which, yeah, I don't know. Jim Ross, have you ever called a Timac match? How about you, Vince? Okay. Tony Schiavone? No. I did.
You did. Oh, so what's one thing you're most proud of during your time at HWA?
Yeah, well, I think I touched on it earlier. I think that roster that we built when we were the not real HWA, I think we brought, you know, we were bringing in people that, you know, we had a great tag team division. And we had the Airborne, we had the Noble Bloods, we had the Hybrids, we had GP Code for a while until we split them off.
The Mavericks.
We had then later when Vu and Mox were on the same page and they were Royal Violence. I mean, we had a lot of bringing in like Jesse Emerson. You know, we had guys coming in and I think that roster, I love that roster. And I think one of the best shows we did, what was it called? Hysteria? It was a WrestleMania weekend show. We didn't have Mox. We didn't have the Airborne. We didn't have one of it. But that thing with Norwood was packed more so than, and it was just a crazy night.
I'd have to look that up, man, because I've got all the notes and records from HWA.
Which I appreciate, because that's one thing. You said one of my regrets is I didn't keep track of all that. Like, I'm like, I should have been keeping a notebook of all the weeks and everything that happened. And not that anyone would necessarily care, but that would be nice to go. Like, when I see you post the history of HWA stuff, I see those cards. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah. And everything kind of makes sense. Like, it's still like, okay, yep, this is why we did this. This is why we did this. This is why we did this. This was building to that. That was building to that. I appreciate your work because...
Well, thank you.
I did not keep records. Every once in a while, I'll find like a scrap of paper in a folder or something or in an old note. And I'm like, what is this? And it's just a scribbled down card because Wednesday nights that's often how it was. Like, who's here? Okay, well, here's what I had planned, but let's see how much what we planned and what we could do.
Yeah.
My phone at work on a Wednesday would just be nonstop.
Would it really?
I'm so lucky my boss kind of just left me be to do my job because he'd be like, what are you doing over here? Why are you on the phone? No, because so-and-so will be late. This one won't be there. This one is going to be there when he wasn't supposed to be there. And yeah.
It's like keeping track of children.
Yeah, at times, indeed.
So let's talk some about your recent comeback to commentary with Spot Monkey Promotions.
Unexpected,
really? So tell everyone a little bit about Spot Monkey Promotions, because you mentioned you're doing commentary for them. It's like, who is this group? I've never heard of them.
I had mentioned Tim Tatum, who had, you know, was kind of the on-air authority figure for a bit, and then he became, I think he was our president at one point. And yeah, he just started doing these spot shows here and there, and after doing so many of them, he's like, the light bulb went off. He's like, I'm going to call my group Spot Monkey Promotions because I just do these little random spot shows. He's not like a weekly thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the plan was, I'll do 4 to 6 shows a year. You know, I'm not going to do, and now he's, I think, expanded a little bit. He started doing those shows and then, yeah, because I had gone 2 years to the original Battle in Bird because he brought in Carlito, and I'm a Carlito mark. So I'm like, well, you know what? I've needed an excuse to go visit everybody down in Cincinnati, and Carlito is cool enough reason to go down and check things out. And the next thing I know, he's like, you know, we're thinking of putting these shows, try them out on Premiere. Would you want to do some voiceover work? And I'm like, why not? You know, I had not done it in a while, but I'm like, you know what? What's it going to hurt?
And then they've got another show on November 3rd with Jimmy Hart showing up.
Yeah.
And then, a match I'm really kind of interested in, Ron Mathis against Joshua Bishop.
Yeah.
In the tables match.
Tables match, yeah. They set that one up last time. Yeah, Mathis is, that was another guy I should have, when talk about building up that roster. Mathis is, I'm a big Mathis fan, despite our interaction on the Pulse. Big Mathis fan. You know, he was a kid who was training with Cody, and that was, I think, during the Ego Pro run of Cody, and then that kind of fell apart a bit, and they weren't doing anything. So he was kind of a trained wrestler with nowhere to continue and to kind of do what he wanted to do, which was wrestle, which is why he would train to wrestle. So, yeah, we were there for him. And, again, another talk about tag team. Him and Brian Beach were a team for a bit, and then when the time was right, he split them off. Mathis, he's got so much personality, and he's so, for as young as he was, had a very old school mentality. Like, he was somebody I could talk to about wrestling in my day in the 80s, and yeah, like, we can be fine with that. And and it did not surprise me. Like, he is a heel for Spot Monkey. I'm like, you're so good at that, though. You're gonna end up, they're going to love you. And he's like, yeah, pretty much everywhere else I am now, they've turned me babyface. And I'm like, it did not surprise me, because he's so animated and so into his character. It's like, yeah, you can only do that for so long before people are like, we're just entertained when this guy comes out, and we're not going to boo him anymore.
Right. And he even, like, I think HWA did a show in Hamilton, or CZW did a show in Hamilton. Might have been a combo show.
Yeah, I think
I think Ron Mathis was on that show.
Yeah,
I think in some sort of false count anywhere. I think it was like, I want to say it was like Danny Havoc or something like that. And
yeah,
I mean, that was a wild match. They tore that building up there in Hamilton. Who's someone under the radar, maybe for Spot Monkey Promotions, that you think fans should kind of keep an eye on, because they've got a pretty loaded roster. It's like Joey Janela and Joshua Bishop, and then lots of kind of up and coming talent like Carson Drake, Justin Xavier, etc.
Yeah, I think Justin Xavier definitely has something. He obviously has a very unique look.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has a metabolism that makes me want to hate him. Because I look at food and I gain 5 pounds. This kid, I think, tries. You could probably be like, go hog wild at every fast food place between here and your home, and he'd still probably wake up that morning skinny. But, yeah, he definitely has something there. There's kind of that, a little bit of that 1-2-3 kid, lightning kid type vibe to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that's definitely impressed me the most. And just, yeah, just the fact I called it, he had a street fight with Mathis. Mm-hmm. Just holding your own in a match with like that with Mathis, who, as you just mentioned, you know, had experience doing those crazy matches. I mean, that's kind of his thing. He was facing CZW guys. So, yeah, he's definitely the one. And, yeah, Joshua Bishop. I mean, you know, he's like a mini version of Sid.
Yeah,
not that mini, but he, you know, he's not as big, but he's another one. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited for the tables match between Bishop and Mathis.
Would you say that there's any difference doing commentary for Spot Monkey as opposed to doing commentary for HWA, or is it kind of the same deal?
Well, it's a little bit different because I did it on my own. Where normally in HWA, I had a partner for the most part. So that alone, and plus doing it in post, these first two that I did, although I did some post work for HWA as well when needed. So I think that's really the only difference. But yeah, for me, when I started doing commentary, got the chance, you know, at that point, Jim Ross was at his peak. And it was like, oh, I need to try my best to be even 10% as good as JR, I'll probably be fine. And when I would listen to myself back, though, there was no JR detected. It was all Vince. Vince McMahon obviously influenced my commentary style more than I could have ever, like, just subconsciously, I think, just because it was more about telling the story as opposed to blow by blow, hold by hold. It was more, what's the story here? What is this guy's personality? What's that guy's personality? Why are they fighting? Like, that was more my strength. Because, yeah, I would listen back. I'm like, oh, my, I'm Vince. Especially if I had a heel with me and I could just shut him, like, try to shut him down like Vince would, Jesse, and just the arguing.
Right.
But, yeah, the big change is, obviously, I've done these solo. I may have a special guest or two to pop in since I'll be right there. Not everybody was going to just come up to my basement to join me. Yeah, I'm going to be doing that Saturday afternoon. Anybody wants to stop by, bring some snacks, and we'll call a match around my computer monitor.
So, Cam, talking about announcing, what would you say, or doing commentary for wrestling, what would you say makes a good wrestling commentator?
You have to have enthusiasm. You have to kind of be a bit of a salesman. Obviously, product knowledge is probably the biggest key, so you know what in the hell you're talking about, or at least make people believe you know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah, I know this last one, there was a couple times where I had like a brain fart, and I'm like, okay, and you just move on. It's like you just got to go, which, you know, it's kind of the name of the game is just don't, if you do screw up, just keep going, because if you try to dig yourself out, you're just going to make it worse, usually. I remember there was one, I think, during the Evendale years where I just set a date that was completely like the not, like the day was like the 15th. Mm-hmm. But then later, like, yeah, you said February 15th, and it was like, we're in August. And I was like, oh, okay.
Planning ahead for next February.
Apparently, yeah, I was really... We're really building this show up. It's going to happen in next February. So if I'm talking about now, it must be something special. No, but you got to be able to ad lib too, because you don't know. You just got to be able to call what you're seeing. I guess that's another advantage of the post is I'm actually seeing what the people watching are seeing. Mm-hmm. We're at Evendale. We were just sitting there. We didn't have monitors. We were looking at the ring. So we had an idea because we would see where the camera people were. But yeah, when stuff got like out of our view, it was kind of, that made it a little bit more challenging because we didn't know exactly what everybody was seeing. But yeah, the main thing, product knowledge, enthusiasm. If you're not excited about it, why should the people listening be excited about it? If you don't make it seem believable, why are the people at home going to suspend their disbelief and be like, get into it? If you're like making a joke of it, no,
right,
that's not going to work. So, yeah.
All right. Well, before we wrap things up here, Chris, I just want to take a second to say thank you for joining me on the show today. Really appreciate it. Also want to take a quick second to plug all the other shows you can find here on WrestleIn, including shows like Tokyo Joshi Freedom Fighters, Ace Techers, The Choco Cast, All Elite Listening, Purovision, The Ocean Cyclone Show, and we have two Patreon exclusive shows called Into the Wrestleverse and Noob Japan. You can follow WrestleIn on Twitter at WrestleIn. You can follow me on Twitter at RyderAdam84 and at History of HWA. You can follow Chris the Brain on Twitter at ChrisTheBrain74, and you can follow his podcast, the Bulletproof Podcast, at Bulletproof Pod. Chris, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up here?
No, just, Jim, thank you for having me on. Good to kind of go back and reminisce. I'm glad I obviously had at least an impact on you, and hopefully the shows we were putting on had an impact on you. Yeah. They seem to have. So, yeah, it was a special time in my life, and I'm kind of glad I'm dipping my toe back in the water and getting in there again.
That's all there is for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.